We're going to turn things back over to Carrie, actually. Totally different subject, though a little bit of lead belly, possibly. I was going to pick up Big Bill Brunzi. But I think he did manage to make that work, but in Britain and in kind of a different context. And I'm sure Carrie will talk about that. And just a little bit of further introduction. Carrie is the author of 9 books on American roots music and the 5-time winner of the ARSC Award for Excellence. He's been a member since 2002 and has presented at every conference since then, save one. I very particularly remember your Patio Daniel paper. And his most recent book is The Evolution of Man, Herbie Mann and the Flute in Jazz. He's currently serving as ARSC's second vice president and program chair. Today he'll be talking about a subject near and dear to my heart, Britain skiffle phenomenon.
Thank you. The craze for skiffle music in Britain lasted for only 2 years, from 1956 to 1958. But this invigorating blend of American folk and blues, which grew out of the traditional jazz revival in England, set the stage for the British invasion of the 1960s. No other short-lived musical style has had such a dramatic effect on popular music history. The word skiffle first appeared on a 78 in December 1925 with this Paramount record by Jimmy O'Brien's famous Washboard Band. A skiffle was a kind of slang, another word for a rent party, with participants gathering around a rickety piano and throwing pennies or dimes or nickels in a bucket to help pay the rent. Eventually, it came to mean any informal jam session utilizing non-standard, often homemade instruments, including jugs, washboards, and kazoos. Sometimes called spasm or hokum bands, these informal groups existed long before O'Brien's little trio made that record in 1925. One of the earliest examples of this was Emil Stalebred Lacombe's Razzy Dazzy Spasm Band, a group of white teenagers that performed in New Orleans in the late 1890s. Bands utilizing jugs, washboards, and comb and tissue paper kazoos included such 1920s groups as the Memphis Jug Band, the State Street Ramblers, and the Mound City Blue Blowers. This is the only other record before World War II to include skiffle in the title. It's an all-star session featuring some of Paramount's best-selling performers. During the 1930s, street musicians playing homemade instruments decreased in number after being subject to harassment from police, especially if they were African American. The word skiffle didn't return until 1946, when Dan Burley, business editor of the Harlem Amsterdam News, formed a group called the Skiffle Boys. Burley, who played piano in Chicago house rent parties in the 1920s, included in his band guitarist Brownie McGee and his brother Granville, calling himself Globetrotter here, but he was also called Stick McGee when he recorded for Atlantic, along with jazz bass player Pops Foster. 6 sides were issued in a 78 RPM album for Rudy Blesch's Circle label, whose advertisements described the Burley sides as rent party music. A year later, another single disc followed, adding horns, and was issued on the RK label. In 1949, the Record Changer started a column devoted to blues and skiffle music, focusing on reissues of pre-war bands like the Mississippi Juke Band and the Memphis Jug Band. The piano, as the central skiffle instrument, had now been replaced by what the magazine called a primitive musical form consisting of no legit instruments. The feel of the music was described in one article as being erotic as all hell and basic to everything in jazz. Well, 1 month earlier, Ken Collier, a 21-year-old trumpet player, formed the Crane River Jazz Band in a corrugated iron hut in Cranford, located 12 miles outside of London on a tiny 12-mile-long tributary of the Thames called the River Crane. Collier and his older brother Bill wanted to emulate the sounds of King Oliver's early New Orleans jazz bands, much as Lew Waters had done in the States in the 1930s and early 40s. Ken Collier had acquired a number of 78s by Lead Belly during a trip to Canada, and during intermissions, his brother Bill would play them for customers on a portable record player, prefacing each with a brief history of the song. The band's trombone player, John R.T. Davis, then encouraged the band to jam on the music heard on the 78s, which soon replaced the record recitals. Ken Collier's charismatic passion for traditional New Orleans jazz earned him the nickname the Governor. And when 18-year-old trombonist Chris Barber also started a band in 1949, Barber instituted a similar practice of playing folk and blues numbers during intermissions. This rare poster, dating from December 1950, shows the Crane River and Chris Barber bands teaming up for a double band concert at Picton Hall in Liverpool. And notice the reference to King Oliver exponents Chris Barber and Crane River's television jazz stars. In 1951, Ken Collier joined the Merchant Navy as a way of getting to his own personal mecca, New Orleans. Upon arriving in Mobile, Alabama, he jumped ship and made his way via Greyhound bus to the Crescent City, where he met clarinetist George Lewis, who offered Collier a job touring with his band. Consequently, Collier was so excited about the organization that he was now playing with and being the only white person in the group, he overstayed his visa, was arrested, and served 38 days in the slammer before being deported to England, where he was accorded hero status for having actually played with authentic New Orleans jazzmen. In 1953, Collier and Barber joined forces, forming Ken Collier's Jazzmen, which included a young banjo player from Scotland named Tony Donegan. Donegan was mesmerized by what he called the American originals, American singers like Frank Crummett and Josh White. He listened to blues on the BBC's Radio Rhythm Club program every Friday night, becoming familiar with 78s by White, Woody Guthrie, and Lead Belly. The Army interrupted Donegan's musical career, but while he was stationed in Austria, he listened to country, gospel, and American folk music on Armed Forces radio. After getting out, he joined Barber as his banjo player and occasional vocalist. Donegan was a voracious record collector. He used to frequent a bookshop on Charing Cross Road, where he regularly pored over 78s stashed in the back, looking for American folk and blues items. He and Ken Collier apparently grappled almost to the death over a Robert Johnson 78 once. He was eventually put in charge of the Intermission Folk Blues Group, which soon became as popular as the parent band. In England, skiffle got to represent the folk, hillbilly, blues, and Lead Belly numbers that Donegan performed with the Ken Collier Skiffle Group. In this recording from an April 1953 radio broadcast in Denmark, we hear Donegan on banjo singing Hard Times Blues.
People's all moaning about hard times and I don't know why they should. I them moaning about hard times, well, I don't know why they should. Well, if some folks is like me and have no money when times is good, then I have...
Ken Collier and Tony Donegan's combustible personalities led to Collier finally departing to form his own band. Around this time, Donegan changed his first name to Lonnie in honor of American blues guitarist Lonnie Johnson, who he saw perform on a tour of England in the early 1950s. As late as September 1953, Donegan was still using Tony on Collier's Decca releases. But after Collier left Barber's group, Donegan became Lonnie for good. On June 25, 1954, Ken Collier's skiffle group, without Lonnie Donegan, became the first British band to record the music, featured on Collier's 10-inch LP, Back to the Delta. The notes describe the three skiffle tunes as 8 and 12 bar blues in the Dan Burley style of Chicago skiffle, despite the absence of a piano in the group. On Tuesday, July 13th, 1 week after Elvis Presley's first recordings for Sun in Memphis, the Chris Barber Jazz Band held a session in Northwest London for English Decca. A 10-inch LP, New Orleans Joys, was released in the U.S. on the London label using the same template artwork as Collier's LP. Although the studio engineer was only interested in instrumentals by this group, he left the tape recorder running during a tea break, and Donegan, Beryl Bryden on washboard, and Barber on bass recorded two Lead Belly tunes, Rock Island Line and John Henry. New Orleans Joys sold 60,000 copies within a few weeks, so Decca started issuing singles from the record. Donegan's two skiffle titles were held back for more than a year, but when they finally came out in November 1955, it started a tidal wave of interest in skiffle. Within 6 months, it sold 350,000 copies in the UK, while a co-issue on the US London label sold 700,000 more, reaching the top 10. Donegan received some flack for claiming songwriting credit on the traditional tunes, a practice he repeated throughout the 1950s. In fact, Alan Lomax had started copywriting some of Lead Belly's tunes after the success of Goodnight Irene, and he was miffed when he saw Rock Island Line issued on the American London label with Lonnie Donegan's name prominently displayed as songwriter. But he was short of funds at that time and was not able to muster enough to start a lawsuit. Rock Island Line was based on Lead Belly's version of the song, which began with a brief narrative explaining how railroad engineers would avoid paying toll on their cargo by claiming they were carrying live animals. Donegan then launched into a rapid-fire, accelerating version of the song. When compared with the bland, pallid pop that was prevalent in England in the early 50s, skiffle represented an exciting adventure into the glamorous history of the American folk music frontier.
Now this is Rock Island Line. I go out on people blow the train whistle, talk to the depot agent. Depot agent throw that switchboard over the line, and they ain't never gonna talk to him. I got goats, I got sheep, I got cows, I got hogs, I got horses, I got all livestock, I got all livestock. Now that old Rock Island Line is getting on down the road. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you're bound to get your ticket at station on the Rock Island Line.
I have to pay me nothing, and the train goes through. And when you go through the toll gate, the train got up a little bit of steam and a little bit of speed. And when the driver think he's safely on the other side, he shout back down the line to the man. He said, I fooled you, I fooled you. I got pig iron, I got pig iron, I got old pig iron. Now I'll tell you where I'm going, boy. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line is a road to ride. Yes, the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. And if you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. I may be right, may be wrong. You know you're gonna miss me when I'm gone.
Early in 1956, the Lonnie Donegan Skiffle Group issued Backstairs Session, a 45 RPM EP that also started climbing the charts. Inspired by Donegan's excitable hillbilly twang, thousands of British teenagers started buying guitars and forming amateur skiffle groups of their own, some of which performed in English coffee bars, where underage youngsters, unable to enter pubs, could listen to the music to their heart's content. Within a few months, guitar sales exploded at a rate of 5 times the previous year. Other homemade instruments were sold as well, including basses fashioned from old tea chests and washboards taken from family kitchens. Donegan published a songbook of his skiffle arrangements, and folk clubs featuring the music sprang up everywhere. By the spring of 1958, there were an estimated 800 professional and amateur skiffle groups in London alone. A television program, the 6-5 Special, featured the most popular of the skiffle groups, as well as rock and roll acts and an amateur showcase, pretty much the British version of American Bandstand. 1957 was the big boom year for skiffle. The Vipers was the first skiffle group to follow the lead set by Donegan. 1 month after their first session, they had their first hit, a rendition of an American fiddle tune first recorded by Uncle Bunt Stevens called Sail Away Lady, which was retitled Don't You Rock Me Daddy-O. The Vipers recording was based on a version by Uncle Dave Makin, but Donegan's own recording of it eclipsed it, having a decidedly harder-edged sound. By this time, Donegan had dispensed with the washboard in favor of drums, electric guitar, and slapping bass, already transforming skiffle in what would become British rockabilly. Lonnie Donegan's skiffle group became England's hottest act. His rip-roaring versions of traditional American folk songs and blues transformed British music, and his frenetic, hard-charging music was as wildly revolutionary as punk would be 20 years later. In this clip, we see Donegan at his wildest, taking a folk song and injecting it with musical rocket fuel.
In Washington, a gamble down in Maine, I'm going down into Georgia, gonna knock down my last game. I'm a gambling man, man, man. I'm a gambling man. And I had not been in Washington many more weeks than 3 when I fell in love with a pretty little girl and she fell in love with me. I'm a gambling man, I'm a gambling man. I'm a gambling man, 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 a gambling man, 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 a gambling man, 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 a gambling man.
Lonnie Donegan's recording of Rock Island Line caused the entire country to go skiffle crazy. In America, it wasn't more than a passing fad like the Calypso craze, but the furor was enough to inspire satirist Stan Freberg to record his own parody.
Okay, here we go. On the Rock Island Line, can the money get rolled? On the Rock Island, you sure you didn't want the pig iron part?
Forget it, will you forget it?
Okay. Little line, there's a line to ride. On the Rock Island Line, can the money get rolled? What if you want to ride it, got to ride it like you finally got your ticket at Satan for the Rock Island Line.
Look, Mumbles. Hey, Mumbles, what is this? Get your chicken at the station?
Oh, ticket. Get your ticket at the station.
Oh, get your ticket
Gee,
at
miss,
the station.
Try not to interrupt me, huh? A, B, C, W, X, Y, Z. The cat's in the cupboard, but he don't see me.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Not a rock on
the... Wait a minute. The A, B, C, W, X, Y, Z with the cats in the cupboard. I don't know. What is the A, B, C got to do with the cats in the cupboard?
What's it got to do with it?
I know. Is it a social significance of some kind?
It's just a
difference of something?
Traditional lyric.
It's a traditional lyric.
I don't know, yeah.
Well, thanks very much. That'll be fine.
I got one more course.
Satire wasn't limited to American audiences, however. The British team of Morris and Mitch also used Freberg's notion of skiffle interruptus to make their point in this 1957 recording, What is a Skiffler?, which likens skifflers to American beatniks.
Skifflers come in assorted weights, sizes, and colors. But all skifflers have the same creed, to enjoy every second of every minute of every hour of every session, and to protest with two cards, their only weapon, when their last minute comes and the coffee bar keeper packs them off for the night.
Hello, you Rocky Daddy.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. There's still a bit more time to go. It's a bit more of the speech part.
Oh, I say, really, this is a bit much, you know. We've taxied our teacher's base all the way down here, and you, all you can do is blather.
I know, I have to explain.
You're a drag man.
A skiffler is truth with dirt on his jeans, wisdom with a growl on his voice, beauty with cake in his beard, and the hope of the future dragging a guitar through the dust of Soho. He likes duffel coats, spaghetti, folk music, basketball boots, riverboat shuffles, gaily painted taxicabs, bob cord, and beche. He's not much for progressive jazz, classical painting, money, Sunday school, music lessons, neckties, squares, barbers, or people without beards.
Good gracious, man, you are rather hogging it a bit, you know. I mean, as leader of the Threadneedle Street Thumpers, I'm just not used to this kind of treatment. Look, we're nearly at the end of the record. It's nearly all gone. It just isn't Leadbelly.
A skiffler is a magical creature.
After the Vipers, the next successful band was Chas McDevitt's Skiffle Group. Like Donegan, McDevitt was born in Scotland and got started in jazz bands. After playing in coffee houses and clubs in the Chelsea area, he formed an intermission act of his own, featuring a 21-year-old Scottish folk singer named Anne Wilson, who changed her name to Nancy Whiskey, a term used for hard liquor that was used in a Scottish folk song called The Calton Weaver. In the spring of 1957, McDevitt's group recorded Elizabeth Cotton's composition Freight Train, which McDevitt thought was a folk song, after hearing American folk singer Peggy Seeger sing it in a local pub. Cotton had written the song in 1906 when she was 11 years old. McDevitt's record became a million seller and a top five song in Britain, one of Skiffle's few bona fide hits. In June 1957, McDevitt brought his group to America, where they appeared on The Ed Sullivan Show.
And your Mercury dealer presents The Ed Sullivan Show. Named America's number one TV variety show, starring the nationally syndicated columnist of the New York Daily News, Ed Sullivan.
A whole series of record stars. Top records of the country. This little girl here is Nancy Whiskey of England. Seated on her left is Charles McDevitt and his skiffle group, and they're going to sing the song they made famous all over the world, Freight Train.
Don't fret,
Okay, because of time, we'll cut this a little bit now. Chaz McDevitt's washboard player, Mark Sherritt, would knock a washboard's ridges flat in a week's time. His fingers were pitted and bleeding from flying pieces of zinc after a while. As a publicity stunt, he actually had his hands insured by Lloyd's of London for £5,000. A transplanted American named Johnny Duncan had another major skiffle hit called The Last Trains to San Fernando. We're going to skip that one, but here's the sheet music for it and the disc it was recorded for Columbia Records. You can hear this on YouTube very easily. By 1957, the British airwaves were swamped with skiffle groups like Laurie Desmond and her Rebels, the Clyde Valley Stompers, and the Avon City Skiffle Group. Rock Island Line made Lonnie Donegan a rock and roll idol, as big in England as Elvis and Bill Haley were in the U.S., although Donegan's repertoire remained primarily souped-up versions of Leadbelly, Woody Guthrie, and Carter Family songs. By 1958, the airwaves had become oversaturated with skiffle, and the music started to lose its steam, mainly because no new songs were being written in the skiffle style. Here are some of the records that Lonnie Donegan did that he learned from other sources, such as the Carter Family with My Dixie Darlin', Woody Guthrie with Cumberland Gap, and then from Leadbelly, two songs, Lost John, Bring a Little Water, Sylvie, and Lost John. And here's Elvis here. Elvis had a fresh new repertoire and more dangerous image, and quickly rock and roll took over youngsters' interest. And within a few months, only Donegan was left on the scene. He became more of a generic entertainer, broadening his base to record old music hall songs like Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor and My Old Man's a Dustman. Despite its brevity on the scene, skiffle left its mark on British musical culture. In 1957, a Liverpool lad named John Lennon started his own skiffle group called the Quarrymen. One of the first songs they ever performed live was Donegan's Puttin' on the Style. Two other skiffle-mad teenagers were soon added to the band, guitarist Paul McCartney and George Harrison. Elsewhere, a young drummer named Richie Starkey joined the Eddie Clayton skiffle group. He would later change his name to Ringo Starr. Another Liverpool skiffle fan, Jerry Marsden, future leader of a band called the Pacemakers, left school at 15 to form a skiffle band. In Northern Ireland, teenager Van Morrison acquired a guitar and a Carter Family songbook and formed a skiffle group called the Sputniks. Other future British rock stars included Ray Davies of the Kinks, Jeff Beck, Joe Cocker, Chaz Hodges, Wayne Fontana, Freddie Garrity of Freddie and the Dreamers, Roger Daltrey of The Who, and Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones all got their start by playing in British skiffle bands. And in this last clip, we see a 14-year-old Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin performing in an amateur skiffle group on a BBC talent showcase.
Now then, you're called what?
J.T. Skiffle Group.
And you come from?
Epsom.
What are your two names? Yours is?
James Page and
David Housman.
Both from Epsom. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do when you leave school? Take up skiffle?
No, I want to do, biological research.
Do you? Mm. I knew that already. In fact, what do you mean by biological research?
Well, cancer, if it isn't discovered by then.
That'll be the last audio track, Lenny. No more audio tracks. The legacy of skiffle lived on in the Beatles' repertoire. If you listen to All Together Now from the Yellow Submarine album, you will hear skiffle in all of its glory represented by this recording. And also there's a brief snippet of Maggie May on the Let It Be album, which was made popular by the Vipers skiffer group. The musicians who got their start in skiffle bands became the central thrust of the British invasion of the 1960s. Without skiffle, many of them might never have gone into music in the first place. Today, Lonnie Donegan, the instigator of skiffle and its only superstar, who propelled it from intermission music at jazz gigs to a nationwide phenomenon, is a forgotten figure, never even being nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. To Paul McCartney, he was the first person we had heard of from Britain to get to the coveted number one in the charts, and we studied his records avidly. We all bought guitars to be in a skiffle group. He was the man. And Elton John agreed. He was the first person I ever saw on British television who played something different. It was fantastic to see someone change music that much. Lonnie Donegan died of a heart condition in 2002 at the age of 71. In 1999, he was asked by British disc jockey Mike Harding how he felt about being such a seminal figure in the development of British rock and roll. Donegan considered this for only a moment and then said, "Discreetly proud." That's it.